Welcome to 7 Questions, a Hear Your Story podcast using 7 questions from the Tell Your Life Story Guided Journal. Here we share the stories of people who live storied lives. That includes everyone, of course. But today we have Dr. Sangeeta on the show. So let's get to know her, shall we? Hi there!
Hi,
how are you doing?
Hi, Robin. Doing okay? Yes, I'm doing more than okay. I'm doing very well. I'm connecting with you all from Siena in Tuscany, Italy.
Very cool. Love that. just before we started, we were talking about your name, and that was interesting and getting into it. However, before we start talking about that, would you like to tell me a little bit about yourself?
Well, I would like to thank all of you and for inviting me to be a part of this beautiful work that you're doing in cultivating stories, curating stories, sharing stories, helping people ask meaningful questions. So the first thing I would like to share about me is a feeling of gratitude for being here. And then my life has been always filled with awe for sound, and I currently live in Siena, which is where I was born, and I work mostly with storytelling and the yoga of sound. It's called Nad Yoga. It's a traditional form of yoga practice. It's philosophy, principles, and practices, and the heart of the study and the practice is the cultivation of inner silence. So on the one hand, I'm very passionate about stories. I'm a writer and I'm a teacher. And at the same time, I'm cultivating the silence inside, which corresponds to a feeling of serenity. So that's really my focus.
Wonderful. That is so interesting. I'm very genuinely, I'm so glad that we're having this conversation, because I feel like the path to get there must be, like, I feel like you may have tried a bunch of different things to get to this. Is that true? Do you think that tracks?
Yes. That is correct. Yes.
That's wonderful. So I tell you what. Before I properly crack into this, because I am actually interested in our first question, so I'm going to ask our first question, and then I'm going to talk to you a little more about that. Our question number one is, what makes you lose track of time because you love doing it so much?
Connection with other people that is genuinely inspiring and supportive of each other. So, for example, something like this, I am definitely going to lose track of time. So I'm so happy you're keeping track of that, because definitely. So even when I listen to a podcast or look at an interview, but overall, connecting with nature, connecting with myself, or connecting with other human beings, other creatures even, where there's a genuine exchange of good intention and inspiring stories, yeah, or fun facts that are educational. That's definitely when I lose time. And when I teach, because when I teach, what I hope to stimulate is mutual inspiration. So this feeling of inspiration, you know, where you're like childlike in awe, that's definitely anything that stimulates that, whether it's dancing or walking or teaching, or then definitely I will lose the sense of time.
Wow, love that. So, okay, before show, we were talking a little bit, because just about your name in general. Would you like to tell me a little bit more about that? You have an Italian name, you have an Indian name as well.
Yes, so, and both names actually refer to something similar, which is interesting. So my Italian name was given to me by my parents. I was born and raised in Italy. So Laura or Laura comes from the plant, the laurel plant. Mm-hmm. And it is the leaves of the laurel are placed on the, you know, on the crowns of this wreaths, right, of poets, of like Apollo, and you see the wreaths of laurel. So that's the name Laura. But Sangeeta means the art of devotional music and dance. And it's It's a very special thing that was gifted to me by my teachers in India after I completed a certain amount of training and I proved myself to be ready to receive a name that resonates with specific qualities of my birth. So I don't want to get too much into it because it's kind of complex, I don't know, but yeah, so they gave me this name so that by pronouncing the name, the value of the meaning of the name can manifest in my life.
Wow, sure. So I know you said that, that was gifted to you by teachers. Like, how did you go about getting that? Was that like a, was it like a long journey that you like went to go find yourself and ended up finding this place? Was it something that you actively were seeking out at the time?
Yes, not the name. I didn't know about the name.
No, of course.
I didn't,
yeah.
Right. But yes, the I was really seeking this feeling of serenity that I was telling you about. I think serenity is really close to sanctity. You know, when people ask me, because I teach spiritual matters like, you know, yoga, philosophy, some of this goes into spirituality, some of this goes into religion. And so sometimes people ask me, what is spirituality? What do you mean? And I say, practically speaking, it's serenity. Just to begin, you know, the simple answer.
Yeah.
If someone is serene, truly serene, they really are a developed human being. You know, so serenity is very different than carelessness, obviously, right? So, but I was looking for the sense of ease and serenity in myself because I constantly, like, since I was a child, I felt this restlessness inside. I had a lot of restlessness. And before I was able to understand what it is, in fact, it isn't restlessness, it's a lot of energy, we would say today. I didn't understand it. And so I didn't know how to manage it. And it gave me trouble. I was overactive. That search for serenity and therefore later silence has always been there. And at some point I was able to go to India and I've always wanted to go, actually. And I was 36, so I wasn't super, super young. And I went and I found this, I went because I had found the teacher. I didn't go on a journey by myself in India and then found it there.
Yeah. Wow. Wonderful. Okay. So you said you were 36 when you took this journey. How old were you when you started your, you know, kind of the path to that spirituality? Was that around the same time? Was it a really quick, like, you found spirituality and then you just, you were like, immediately found someone and went? Or how long was that path?
No, I think that actually, if I think back when I was a child, because, you know, one of the things that I ask when I work with the voice and I work with people, I ask them, what games did you play as a child? What are some positive memories you have of playing as a kid? And because that memory will tell you what you like to do today, very likely, you know. And my memory is that I'm playing alone and I was just singing for dead buds. So I would just find that. I would find dead buds and then I would sit them there. Like I would just put them in the cemetery. And then I would just sing to them. You know, and now that I'm thinking back, you know, it's exactly what I'm doing now, more or less. But still. So I think that I was always very interested in what is beyond the appearance. Why are some people happy and why are some people sad? What is this quality of being sad? You know, what is it? So as a child, I was curious about that. And so I think that the seed of that search was in me from when I was very little. But I think the spiritual journey, like to even be in the, into the search of the self, I think that perhaps the puberty years, it's when it started.
Sure.
But I wasn't looking for it in India. I was looking for it in heavy metal music at first.
Oh, wow. Cool. Okay. Sure,
so,
sure.
So the journey has been very different.
Do you find a relation between the noise of that heavy metal and silence, do you find, like, it's kind of two extremes of the same, like, thought?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What an insightful question. It's very insightful. Yeah, it really is, because, yes, I think I started from heavy metal gave me a chance to scream,
mm-hmm.
you know, to really tap into that permission to scream, you know, to just have that intensity. And that's one end of the spectrum. And then on the opposite side of the spectrum fully is that serenity and that calm that doesn't need to make much noise at all.
Yeah,
but I also don't think of heavy metal as noise. I think of heavy metal as a form of music. But definitely is quite intense, and it has a lot of
sound
in it. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's kind of a similar thing where I live at the minute. Actually, this is a thing I'm going to circle back to because you were talking about games. I'm in a house with, we are all game designers here. It's a thing that we like. But we also have a lot of people that listen to a lot of jazz. And I feel like there is also some form of connection to that, like how music, how music just kind of connects to a person and kind of almost forces your body to make like movements, and it kind of forces that a form of like mental pattern in the same way that silence does when making a game or thinking of a story. I found when I was younger that I would always think of the best things when my headphones ran out of power or broke, and I just had to walk home in silence. That was always more productive to, you know, me thinking of things than listening to anything. And then when I got older and I got more into writing, I would then put on music that, I know that a lot of heavy metal does have lyrics, but things that was you know, more jazzy or didn't have any lyrics, so I could just kind of feel out like a different form of pattern than the silence was giving me.
Yes. Which city are you?
Oh, that's a very complicated question. So at the minute, you are looking at me being in Brooklyn in New York City. I'm from London, in the UK originally, and I currently live in Toronto in Canada. I am in Brooklyn at the minute because we're figuring out I'm finding out visa stuff, so I have like a lot of trips down to Brooklyn because I pay rent for this apartment and an apartment in Toronto. It's a whole thing, so it's a complicated question of where I'm found. Oh, I love it so much because of all the I love it because of that. I'm a big city boy. And when it comes to, you know, noise and things, I love a city because I love the ambience of people. I also love the fact that truly there's people doing things and interesting and weird, you know, creative passions consistently going on. That's a big thing that I really connect with and love. So going back to the first question that I asked you, and your answer being, oh, you can lose track of time in getting to know and speaking to people. That's me. Absolutely exactly the same. Truly, put me in a party where everyone has a deeply weird interest, and I'm there like, hey, so we should talk about this. That's amazing. Yeah. No, I love it.
Totally.
Okay, moving on to question number two. How would you describe your family when you were growing up?
Oh, I looked at this question again and again because there were so many memories that came up when I was looking at the question you sent me. I would describe the family as a family that works together to adapt to the change of time. And what I mean by that is that my parents, they were born right before World War II here in Italy.
Oh, sure.
And they were both not very wealthy. They were actually pretty poor. And they didn't had a chance to get an education. So they both survived the war. Then they met each other right after the war. And then when they got married, it was, 50s, 60s, that period of like great expansion economically in Italy, the rebuilding of the nation and all of that, and a huge impact that the US had on Italy at the time. So they got married and they decided that, my dad was going to work, my mom was going to be home, help us grow up and all of that. I have an older sister who's 7 years older than me. Stefania is her name, and my dad's name is Mario, and my mom's name is Giuliana. So I grew up looking at, my dad working really hard, my mom being home, my sister being a teenager in the 80s, 1980s, with this crazy music and fashion that was going on at the time. My God. And me being a very introspective child, feeling a little bit at a loss. Like I wasn't really understanding anything growing up. I wasn't at ease. I told you before, right? I was just going along, and but it really took me a long time to feel like, oh, I belong here on this planet. I belong here in this town, in this family. It took me many, many years. I was an adult when I came back, and I was like, oh no, I get it. Okay. But growing up, it was just, I don't know, but it was a happy childhood. The family provided for me and my sister. We were very blessed, and I spent quite a bit of time alone playing. That's why I think looking at how you play tells you a bit about your predispositions, because I really like solitude a lot. But I was just playing and creating imaginary worlds, and the family was there. For holidays, we would get together with my brothers, with my father's brothers, and we were a large family, and everybody would joke aloud, pretty loud, people joking with each other. It's a culture where we now it's changing a bit here too, but at the time in the 70s, people still had quite comfort with touching, hugging, pushing, shoveling, just sitting on top of each other. I mean, it was just really a bundle of energy. And one thing I remember is my father and my mother truly doing their best to keep us healthy, provide for us, and keep all of the brothers and sisters together as well. So I would describe it, as I said at the beginning, as a family that worked together to keep the family together.
A real unit of
A unit, yes, a unit, yeah.
You have clearly grown up very, you said you were an introspective child, and you've grown up clearly to be very insightful and have a connection to yourself and spirituality. Would you say that your family shares this? Was this a thing which you picked up from different family members, or is it maybe something, or even friends when you were, younger? Or is this a thing that you really had to go out and seek for yourself?
My mother is a Catholic, and she raised my sister and I as Catholics, so we used
Oh,
to go to
sure.
church and all of that. But I went to catechism, I studied as a child, blah blah blah. But I seeked it for myself because I was looking for something a little bit different than an established religion. And there was something about the way that religion was taught. Some of the things, like the virtues and things like that, made sense. But I really was looking for something different. I was looking for the space of contentment, as I said again, but also like feeling at ease. And that I had to seek for myself. I started on a journey of mental health. I was didn't start on a journey of spirituality. I was having some unresolved trauma. And so for myself, I was like, okay, I just need to take care of this, you know. But interestingly enough, I didn't go to a therapist. I went to India instead, you know. So I guess inside of me, there was already that understanding that I was looking for a spiritual answer. But I wasn't like, you know, a young teenager studying spirituality and practicing yoga.
No.
I was pretty rebellious and pretty crazy until I was in my late 30s. Mid 40s, actually. Actually, let's stretch it out. Mid 40s. After the mid 40s, I started to be like, okay, it's the same thing again and again. How are we going to change it? You know?
So, we've talked a lot about you being, you know, having a lot of spirituality, but what is it about? What is it about the spirituality that you know, you find such a connection with? I know we've talked about like the beauty of silence and this inner peace, but what is it that calls to you, do you think? Maybe even what is it that calls you kind of outside of the, you know, your almost hunt for this peace within yourself?
You use a very good verb, calling, because it is very much about the voice and it is very much about stories. So what calls me is this choosing to be happy, choosing to be healthy. It's a choice. Now, happiness and health are dynamic. So we're not talking about this perfect state of, you know, there's no perfect state of anything. Everything is dynamic and changing in life. But this, of all of the things that I can focus on, I focus on different things. Let me step back a second. I focus on career through my academic work. I focus on a relationship or two here, there. I focused on money. I focused on But then things slowly started to lose interest for me, which was quite frustrating. It was like, oh, I'm not getting in this thing. So what is it about spirituality, especially in the types of spirituality that give you the power of your own choices? So I follow spiritual traditions that give me the responsibility. I don't delegate my responsibility to my guru acharya or the priest, or the types of practices I follow make me aware. Oh, hey, what are you going to, why did you react like that? Why did you say that? Why are you thinking about that? You know, so that's what we're talking about. So in that way, I cannot have excuses. I cannot come up with excuses. I repeatedly focus on what is the appropriate thing to do in the appropriate moment for the right person in the right way. What happens if I don't? What happens if I follow the path of negativity and worry? And what happens? What results do I get? So it's truly an experimentation. I experiment with life. And life is my lab. So I experiment, and then I know what I feel, and then I look, how is the health going? How's the money going? How's the relationships going? What's coming in my inbox when I do this, when I do that? So that's the type of spirituality. And so there's also something else I want to tell you, and I don't know if this is appropriate to talk about, you know, on a podcast or not. But
no, I love it.
Basically, the relationship between serenity, spirituality, and life is that when you look at your breath, And all forms of spirituality have the breath, right? I mean, breathe in, breathe out, the present moment,
Yeah.
this and that. Okay. But few people, few teachers tell you that the reason why we focus on the breath is that we are born on an in-breath and we leave the body on an out-breath. So when you start to work on the breath, truly what you're doing is to overcome the fear of dying. Which is,
oh, interesting. Okay.
It's the nervous system of the mammalian body is designed to stress out if you feel something is happening that you're going to die. You know, obviously, thank God. But that also happens psychologically. You can have a psychological death when you lose someone or you lose a job or there's a tsunami or something like that. Okay.
Yeah, of course.
So what it just means, spirituality, is that now that I'm 52, right? Because when I was younger, I wasn't thinking about this. But now that I'm 52, I'm thinking, oh, okay, so what is my... I don't have ambitions, but let's say, what is my goal? And my goal is to start to prepare to leave the body in a serene state. That's why serenity keeps coming up again and again for me.
Okay.
Now, I don't think about death every second. I'm not like, oh my God.
Yeah, of course.
But when you have that as your goal, then life is lived better.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I get that.
Do you? Because it's a bit weird.
No, but I do get it. I have a lot of, so I do think a lot about, I think a lot about death. I think a lot about that kind of classic, at the end, can I be proud of myself? I think a lot about, like, you know, if I sleep too late in, I'm frustrated because that's less time to be alive. That's less time to be awake. A thing which I truly adore being. And, you know, I love a nap, but I will have a nap and then I'll be like, dang, that's like 40 minutes of life that I have kind of siphoned away. So I do understand the, you know, that the preparedness and focusing on breathing for the serenity of it. I do understand and I appreciate that. And that is an incredibly valuable thing. It's something that I haven't really thought about before, especially the, you know, born on an intake, leave on an exhale is something that I think is, that's really good.
There's something else I wanted to tell you, which is very special, is that in yoga, the lifespan is not counted in years. So you're going to die when you are over 80 years old. It's understood that every person is born with a specific amount of breaths that they have available.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And so the longer you're able to breathe in a calm, relaxed way, the better your life will be anyway, because you're oxygenating your brain and everything. But also because for me, I enjoy relaxing against this speed of life that we're in. I mean, if you're a gamer, I don't know how you manage. I mean, you guys go at a million, like, your minds are so fast, right?
Well, that's actually, that's an interesting thing, because the games that we make are, we make tabletop games. So we make games which, unlike board games, are games purely, like, set in imagination. And there are lots of, there's a fairly popular game, which is about breaths. Breaths and time specifically. So there's this game that we like and we have played called Skeletons, where you all play skeletons and you're in like a little like classic fantasy dungeon. You do one thing each to like help design this thing, and then it's like, okay. And then you are quiet. You turn the lights off and you're quiet for a minute. And then that minute represents 10 years that pass in this little dungeon, and then you all do one thing, and then you all take a breath and you are quiet and you breathe, and then that after that minute, it is 100 years that passed, and it's all about like the passage of time, how life changes, how the things around you have shifted and changed. There's a lot of games about kind of focusing in on yourself, and that is a thing that we like. We are big into those types of, you know, experimental things that are kind of meditations on breathing and time. We like those things. But
I want to be your best friend, your new best friend.
I like it. Those are the types of games that we're making. We're always looking into.
Wow.
Because it's a, you know, I when we talk about play and when we talk about being a child, play and imagination is something that we have almost from the second that we are born. We don't even forget it. I don't think we forget it. There's a lot of people who say that they're no longer creative and, you know, no longer have that spark in them. But I think that that spark comes out when they ingest a piece of media that they really like. When they hear a story that they get excited. When they're sat around talking to friends and they start telling a story, or they hear a story of them their friend doing something ridiculous, that childhood excitement, that imagination comes out. And I think it's incredibly important. It's why I like this conversation in particular is really interesting to me. Because that inner peace and that like understanding of play as a kid is really a thing which I care a lot about, and I think is very real. I apologize. You were saying something about and then you said, oh, you were you're a gamer, so your mind is moving a mile a minute, and then I interrupted to be like, well, kind of.
No, I was very curious. I think that's it. You know, it's difficult sometimes to explain that, you know, people ask you, what do you do? And you describe a process rather than an action.
Yeah.
You know, like so then that's why I always say, you know, I say I'm a teacher, I'm a coach, I'm a guide, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
But actually, that's more like the process itself is what's guiding me. And it was a little bit easier when I was living in the US, because this is more, you know, I was in Chicago and then I was in New York. Mm-hmm. And people would understand this better. Here in a traditional culture, you know, either you are, you know, a nurse or teacher or like,
sure,
a little bit more traditional that way. So when I tell people I'm focused on serenity, people are like, oh, okay. My parents are like, oh.
Okay, I am actually very interested in this third question. This one is one I think, you know, I'm excited to see what your answer is. So question number three that we have here is, who was the first person in your life who truly understood you and made you feel like you didn't have to explain or justify yourself?
My dad.
Ah, love.
Love.
That's cute. Yeah.
I was thinking about this question when you sent it. And at first I was like, oh, maybe my elementary school teacher was, you know, and she was too, and my mom, of course. But actually my dad, before I went to school, my dad would understand certain aspects of me that were a bit rebellious and extravagant for a little girl. And he would make sure that I was safe enough, you know, that I wouldn't go outside of the culture too much to be, you know, not safe. But at the same time, he would encourage me by making, he would himself make certain things that would support me. For example, when I was doing the rituals with the bugs, I would also like to, I was fantasizing about Zorro, this really just this figure.
Oh, of course.
When, yeah. Of course, when I was growing up.
We love Zorro. Yeah.
We love Zorro. So I would put a scarf around my neck and then I would just run up and down, you know, in nature. I'd be like, ah, like this.
Yeah.
You know, so yelling as a kid, but just running, 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 running. As I said, I was kind of restless. And I was running out. And one day he had made out of a bamboo piece, he had made a little knife. And the knife went into another piece of bamboo that was the knife holder. And then he had and then he had some like string that I could, you know, I could just have this around my waist.
That's so cool.
And up to today, he is my best supporter.
Yeah. Wow.
Yes.
That's do you find that yourself and your dad have a or just like are very, very similar, do you think? Because the you found this inner peace and this spirituality, and even though when you were younger you were very energetic and running everywhere, and he making this bamboo knife and sheath, that also feels kind of like a different form of inner peace. I'm wondering if he was also very energetic when he was younger, and then found something that also works for him. Do you find that the pair of you are very similar in that way?
Yeah, we're very, very similar. We also look alike. Yeah, we're very similar. We are very emotional. Like, we really feel all of the feelings, you know. It's truly just emotional. We are moved easily by kindness and beauty and things like this. And we laugh a lot. So my dad also has a really powerful laughter. He also has a temper, which both of those I have. But I think you're right. I think we are very similar, and I think what my dad had, which I inherited from him, is this capacity to find an alternative when something doesn't work. If something doesn't work, we're going to look at a different angle, or look at it from a different angle, or to find another idea. But we're not going to give up unless it's worthy giving up. But otherwise, we won't.
Yeah.
And I think this kind of resilience, both him and my mom have, both of them, but I took it from him for sure. Like, feel the fear and go beyond if it's worth it.
Love that. Yeah. I'm a big believer in, you know, feeling the fear and then just doing it anyway. it's the only way to be brave. You can only be brave if you're horrified and doing it anyway. I like that. As you know, these questions come from Tell Your Life Story, a guided journal that carries the writer through all stages of their life so they can document their history for themselves, because no one can write your story better than you. It's coming to Target on October 28th, and we want to make a splash in our own story at Hear Your Story Books, so we are setting a goal to sell out at Target as soon as it drops. If you want to help make a splash with our story and start writing your own, grab a copy of Tell Your Life Story in Target on October 28th. However, secret, secret, secret. A previous version of the book is available now on our website if you just cannot wait to get hold of it. All right, back to the questions. Question number 4. What period of your life shaped you the most, and how did it change you? On the surface, this sounds like, from what we know about each other, this sounds like it's a fairly easy answer. So I'm excited to see kind of how... what the actual answer to this question is.
Each period of time truly has taken me on to the next. So I would have to say that there were pivotal moments at the major moments of life, you know, growing up, becoming aware, coming of age, blah, blah, blah. Okay, those are all there. But... I want to talk about a memory I have of being in New York because I was studying. I earned a master's and a PhD at NYU.
Oh, so, cool.
Cool. Yeah. So yeah. I was in New York overall for about 10 years, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2001, I was there when 9/11
wow.
happened.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I was living in Brooklyn. And I was close to DeKalb, so close to Manhattan, not far off out. But I didn't have class that morning, so I wasn't on the train exactly at that time to go to NYU.
Yeah.
And what happened is that the reason why I bring that up is because of the acoustic experience I had, the sound experience I had of it, because there were many, many levels of that experience for me as an Italian student living there. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
But what really was very impactful for me is that when I came to the US at NYU, I was studying jazz music, contemporary music, performance art. I was really very much into that. And yes, I was practicing, I was performing off Broadway. It was good.
Cool. Wow.
And when that happened, I started to tune into the sounds of the city and the sirens, the silences, the helicopters. And it was constant. And it was very different than the day before, obviously. It was a very different soundscape.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And that soundscape, I was incapable of moving much. I didn't go out of the house almost at all for about 10 days. I just got really scared and paralyzed by it. And so I was in the apartment in Brooklyn and I was just following the news a little on the radio. But the soundscape just kept coming and I couldn't react to it. I just had to absorb it. And then at one point I started tuning into a lower vibration. It was a very, very low hum. And that low hum, whether it's imaginary or it was my heartbeat or it was there, I'm not sure. I really don't know yet.
Yeah.
But that vibration made me aware of an internal soundscape that is therapeutic. And so from that day on, from being on stage and focusing on a career as an actor or performer, I started moving towards the therapeutic aspects of sound, sound music therapy, sound healing. And therefore, you could say that that is the start of the spirituality. If I now thinking back, I think that that's it, actually.
Wow.
Yeah.
What would you say was the... Okay. Do you think you would have... Because obviously this is a horrendously traumatic event for most of America, if not, you know, beyond that. Would you say that it was that extreme that kickstarted it? Or do you think you would have naturally found that spirituality anyway?
I think I would have found it anyway. But it's not by chance that I found it in that way. You know, it's not like, I don't know that. I mean, let's hypothesize that there's a person like, you know, there's me not being in New York at the time of. Ideally, that didn't happen, or that, you know. Okay.
Sure.
I would have found it. I know I would have found it.
Yeah.
I decided to be born. This is a bit of a parenthesis, you know, in this type of the yoga philosophy. There's an understanding of the transmigration of the soul from life to life. So a bit of that, of my answer is, of course, coming from that understanding for me, that we all choose the family we're born into, the time, the place. I know it's very complicated as an argument, I know. But anyway, so I chose and I decided and I acted upon the choice to be in New York. And it so happened to be at that time. But I really wanted to be in New York since I was a teenager. I really was in love with it. So I decided to be there. And then that happened. And it's not by chance that it happened. And that it gave me, it kind of shook me enough to withdraw from a more performative aspect of sound to a more inward aspect of sound. So it's almost like my soul was like, okay, where am I going to learn this lesson well enough that I don't have to go back, because that's my path, you know? So I was like, oh, then maybe you can be here at this time, there at that time, there at that time. So your path is, you know, the obstacles on the path are going to lead you to where you need to be within this lifetime. Yeah, I like that. I mean, or one could also say, oh, no, whatever. It's all random. I'm happy with that, too. I'm not married. Sure. You know, I'm fine. But I think I would have found it anyway.
I don't know. Okay. If we're talking about spiritual, I don't know about it all being completely random. I do think that our, you know, call it whatever you could say, bodies or souls, do directly seek out a path. And it isn't, because a lot of things it's like, so I have thoughts of like, oh, if I didn't make this one decision, would I be here now in Brooklyn? But then I think, well, when I was a kid, I really loved Friends, the TV show, which was set in New York. I'd always wanted to live in New York. I then, I then did this one thing. I did this one thing, which, like, you know, I did a lot of like acting and theater when I was a kid. And that also kind of propelled me to be like, I kind of want to live in New York. And then I, for my 21st birthday, my mother took me to New York for my first time here. Mm. And then I did one thing that, you know, it kept forcing me into the same place I am now. When I was a kid, I really liked games, and I would make, you know, similar to, you know, singing to bugs, I would make games, and I would play them. I would play multiplayer games on my own, just with little like action figures. I'd be like, okay, and now this is what this character is thinking and what they want to do. I do kind of think that it's not that it's all random. It's kind of like your body and mind will take the shortest possible path to the thing you want, and then maybe it gets knocked a few times and it has to take a longer route there. But it's ultimately, you will find the thing that you want to be doing. And I think that we as people kind of, especially as, you know, you were saying that you're a performer. I grew up with a lot of performers because I went to a lot of, like, you know, drama and theater has been a big thing in my life. I do think people kind of get bogged down with the idea of performance. They think, oh, if you're not, like, doing big plays, you're not actually performing. And then that kind of gets in their mind where it's like, no, you can do a performance just you and your friends in someone's room. That's what a lot of the games that that me and my house design are. They are little performances that we're putting on. It's, you know, connecting to that imagination. It's success is a winding thing, but I think that's what gets people really in their own head about that. Anyway, I just wanted to bring up the point of I'm not sure it's all random. I think it is all random, but your body, mind, soul will find a way to the thing that you want regardless. You do have to have input. I also think that's important. You do have to make decisions. If you don't, then obviously you're not going to get anything.
I agree.
I think in the same way as, you know, you deciding, oh, I am going to take this path, and I am going to, I don't know if you still perform. Did you like completely put it behind you? Do you still like have, I don't know, seek out little jazz performances, sing on holidays and things like that?
So I haven't since I left Chicago in 2020. I left Chicago. I was living in Chicago and came back to Italy, and I haven't since. But it's coming back. The singing especially is coming back, I think. I think by observing how things are moving and putting out the intention that I would like to sing, I would like to use the voice to help people relax and feel this feeling of inspiration and hope, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The voice can truly do that, obviously, you know. So I was invited to record a tiny little verse in a song by a friend who's gonna perform it publicly in a pretty large venue.
Oh, cool.
And through him, I think we could, he said that he has an idea of creating a 50-minute journey, a sound journey in English, where the character, the main character, goes from a totally introspective and obscure sense of self to like a development, an opening up to positivity and self-esteem and things like that. So that's a project that will come, I think.
Nice. That's beautiful. Yeah. I like that.
Okay.
Moving on. Question 5. What's the question you're afraid to ask yourself?
You know, this is such a good question because when I was thinking about it, I couldn't think of anything. I think that I'm so scared, I don't even want to ask now.
Yeah.
Because when I was thinking of questions, for example, did you do everything you could do to be happy or to value yourself, or have you been close enough to people you love? You know, like these big questions.
Yeah.
These questions are the questions that make me afraid. But when I contemplate the questions, I'm not scared. But if I don't contemplate the questions, I know that that I'm scared of them. I don't know how to explain that. It's very strange.
Yeah. No, I understand it. Yeah. Yeah. It's like a it's a fear of knowing that you're scared almost. It's a weird one. Yeah.
It's a weird one. So I think perhaps, but it isn't exactly my mind, but in studying what people who are near death, you know, palliative care and things like that, what questions they ask themselves in those extreme situations. Generally, what they ask themselves, and they may have regrets about, is, have I loved enough?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's something that I am truly. I do ask myself that a lot. It's scary. Yeah, it's a scary one.
That's a scary one for me.
It's
not scary now because I think yes, but. I'm working on this one.
Yeah.
Truly engaging with it. What about you?
Oh, there's so many. it's not a question that like I'm afraid to ask myself if I'm going with the have I loved enough? It's weird because I used to be better at it in quotation marks, which is I would continuously kind of lock down my own feelings and sense of self to try to make the other people around me feel better. And then I would bottle everything up, and it's a weird thing, which through a lot of introspection and being like, that is actually so bad for me as a person, I'm not living to the extent that I kind of want to. I'm living for other people a lot, but yeah, I'm living for other people, but those other people are good. They're happy and, you know, fulfilled. And I, even though I'm not, I cannot be. It's me versus them. And I would rather not be entirely fulfilled than them not being entirely fulfilled. It's one of the weird things where I have to kind of trust that people will be okay if I don't do that. If I don't make sure that they're fine. If I don't drop everything to, you know, try to pick someone up and stop doing the things I want to do because I want to make sure that they're good. I don't know. It's one of those. It's a thing which I'm still struggling with. If we were to ask me base, like, what's the question I'm afraid to ask myself? Again, it's not really something that I'm afraid to ask myself because I ask myself it all the time. It's just like really, truly sitting and thinking with it is something I'm not a huge fan of. I have a lot of dreams. I have a lot of things I really want. I am also very tired all the time. And I never pursue things because I think I am so good in my head. In my head, my imagination, the stories that I have, oh, they're the best stories ever. I am a great performer. I'm really good at writing. As soon as it starts getting onto paper, it's dreadful and it's really bad. And I know that that's not good. I know that you can only get better by being bad a lot. And I think the question is like, why do you continue to do these things even though you know they're not good? Or they won't help you? Why are you doing this even though you know it's not helping anyone? It's like, I don't know. I just am. I'm taking like the it. Soft... Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe it's the fact that I like the fact that I live in a house with a lot of game designers. A lot of the people that I live with are fairly successful in this kind of space. You know, they make games and they're very popular and people are making small businesses, and we have a professor who teaches game design with us. And I was speaking to one of the people who lives here, and there was like a networking party that people were going to, and I was like, I don't want to go to that though. And then I would rather just stay home and hang out. And then my friend was like, yeah, but you don't want to be, you know, in this space and doing these things like we all do. And I was like, oh, I thought that I did though. I thought I did want this, but I mean, I guess I don't. And I guess my body's telling me I don't. I would rather not be popular, not be known, and instead just kind of be happy and content. But then also that feels like a thing that I wouldn't want to be. I don't know. It's a very confusing thing that I am truly still unraveling.
I was thinking a question that is related to this about, you know, have I loved enough, but also have I valued my valor enough? Have I valued my talents enough? That's probably something.
That's definitely something for me. And I don't think I do. I don't think I have all... There are moments... There's a thing about... I think we briefly talked about this, how I like who I am whilst I'm here in Brooklyn, whilst I'm around the people that I am, because I work harder, put a lot of effort into things. I am more creative. I am putting myself forward more. But as soon as I leave here and I'm with other people, I lose that edge. I lose that spark. I lose that valor, as you said. I don't know what it is. I think I don't have any confidence in my own self to be able to pull off the things that I think I know I'm capable of. Not valuing my own talents is a good way of saying that.
It's a good question. And, you know, confidence comes from, it means in Latin, with faith, con fides, with faith. And something that I'm discovering now is that when we want to make sure that our talents are shared well in a healthy way, there's something, our intention on why we do it. And if the intention is, there's something greater about that. It's not just, oh, because that's what you do. You know, in this business, you do the thing and then you become famous and you work and you make money and you're happy or whatever. But it's more like, because by fulfilling what I do, my calling is fulfilled. It's like a confidence is, it's not just you. Confidence means with faith in why you're here.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that, yeah, that some of the responsibility is off your back, and it's like, please, just universe, I'm here, I'm good, help me. Should I go to this networking? Sure.
Yeah.
Just get up and go. It's like, okay, you know, like you have.
Okay, let's do it.
It's not just, yeah, you.
Yeah. I think that's a tough thing for a lot of people, is kind of registering, well, it's not just you, you know, it's you're part of a greater whole. And also, you know, as we were saying before, I did a lot of performance stuff when I was a kid. The idea of being like a cool famous actor has always been like a dream, but it's always been a thing where it's like, well, I know that that's not like, you know, someone who is performing but without an audience, or performing in a small like amateur dramatic society, that is still a success because they are doing it. They're still fulfilling that childhood passion of theirs. That's what matters more than, I don't know, any form of recognizableness.
Yeah. I like that. I agree with that.
Yeah. Question number 6. We'll push it away from me now. I'm going back at you. If you could ensure that your life and your work would accomplish one thing, what would that thing be?
When people come into contact with my name or my work or anything that was touched by it, that they feel a sense of safety, excitement, and possibility, and trust, yeah, in themselves. Mm-hmm. That's it. If anything that I do, like anything that when people think about me, if these are the qualities that they are feeling, inspiration, courage, encouragement, fun, responsibility, healthy, you know, being together with other, communication, then I'm really, really happy.
Yeah.
I would be very happy.
Nice.
Yeah.
No, I like that. Okay, and our final question, which I am very interested to hear the answer of. What question do you wish someone would ask you about your life?
These questions are really difficult, by the way. Well, I'm just telling you and the team, good job. The questions you've asked me, the questions you've asked me are the questions I wish people would ask each other when they meet each other, not what you do necessarily only. But I think perhaps when I'm older or wiser, maybe, mm-hmm, what I would like younger people to ask me is, if I am in a place of tranquility and serenity, it doesn't mean that I'm, you know, necessarily totally healthy or, you know, I hope so, but anyway, if I am, I hope to be able to grow in age and maintain a level of tranquility and health and not be a burden on society and people. This is my ambition, if I should have one, this is it. And at that stage, you know, when I'm a little bit older and maybe someone sees me and is like, oh, who's that cute little old, you know, Italian woman? She looks so happy and cute. You know, let's go check out. Why, you know, we're so stressed. Let's just go her and check. And they would ask me, you know, what's the secret of happiness? You know?
Yeah.
That would be such an honor. And I would just tell them, it's your breath.
Mm-hmm.
Done. That's it. You know, that's really, truly... Because until now, I mean, people can ask me many questions and there are many stories that I could tell about myself, but I also think I'm a person who's growing. I have lots of, you know, weaknesses, vulnerabilities, and I haven't figured out many things. And, you know, so
yeah, people but that's could ask good, me, though. I feel like that's great. That means you have so much more to
yeah.
You know, you have so much more to, you have so many more stories in you because you have things to not yet figure out.
True. Yeah. True. So, but I would project, I would just transpose it in time, if I may. I would transpose it in time and postpone this last question to when I'm a little bit older. And I truly have, because I think the capacity to grow in age with gracefully is an important fruit of a person's life.
Yes, yeah. That I do agree with. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
No. Despite the circumstances, right? Despite the privilege of the circumstances, but still, if you can be graceful about your life and how you're aging and everything, that's a dream for me.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I also think gracefully is an interesting word there, because I think aging gracefully does mean a million different things. And it's like, I feel like aging gracefully is also could be aging with excitement. You're like excited to like be a little older. Yeah. You're excited to help people younger than you. I have a lot of friends who are like younger, and they're like, I am going through a really hard time. I'm excited to be out of this so that when I'm older and I see someone my age now going through the same thing, I could be like, I actually know how to help you. I know that it's going to get better. And I know like, these are ways to help. And that is an exciting, that's aging gracefully for me as
yes,
well.
I agree.
Aging with the desire to help. That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Mm. And finding the community where that is understood, because not every community will understand that. So it is also responsibility not to be taken over by fear that is culturally associated with older years, where, oh, now you're a little older, what do you mean you're going to move to a different place? You know, it's just, no, it's like, you know what I mean? Like to maintain that curiosity and the means to be free. Because culturally, society is like, oh, you're old, well, this is your role. And this is the amount of things you can do, you know, unless you're super rich. That's a different story. But otherwise, it's like, you know, so... I think what I appreciate very, very much about you and Madeline, and I don't know the other members of the team, but I do appreciate that you are creating this work that is intergenerational, and that you're helping people, even with your beautiful books, to ask questions and create these bridges of communication between generations or among more than one generation. And the work is so important and so essential, and it truly means the world. It means the world to me that someone, you know, like you and the team, your team, you know, everybody, you hear your story, the team is willing to interview and hear the stories and create archives in different ways that you do, right? And because it's not very common. It's not so common to have this conversation. Like, this is one of the best conversations I've had. You know, I mean, I shouldn't say that, but it is true. It's like, this conversation is like, wait, can we have another episode in 2 months? It's like, you know, it's like, really, you know, it's so much fun and it's exciting. And but it doesn't happen so much here. People are not asking questions to older people anymore like we used to. So.
No, I get it. And you know, it's a big reason why... us, the team, wanted to do this podcast, you know, kind of next to the journals, because we say at the beginning of the episode, like, everyone has a story. Everyone has something to share with the world and people. And it's always interesting. I think regardless of who you are, it's always an important thing to share. It's an important thing to hear as well, that kind of million different perspectives. Yeah.
There's something else I wanted to tell you before we complete, is that we haven't really talked about this, and I don't know that this is part of the podcast or not, but just for you to know, because I think it's important perhaps. When I was living in Chicago, I taught at DePaul, where I met Madeline, and the theater school. And I was teaching a course at Cook County Jail that I designed called Healing Narratives. And I had students from DePaul and then inside students in the jail. And we worked with storytelling. And, you know, the concept was every person has a voice, etc. Out of that experience, it's a longer story, but just to summarize, out of that experience, a 10-minute video film was made that was nominated for the Emmys, in fact.
Whoa.
And it's called, yeah, I think it's called The Girl Inside. And this beautiful company from Chicago called Behold Production Company, they came in and filmed. It took us 9 months to get permissions to bring batteries and videos and microphones inside, you can imagine. But I think you would enjoy seeing it. And I think because today, before this podcast, I had a meeting, I had another podcast actually with a woman who organized the filming. The organization is called One Girl Revolution. And the film is called The Girl Inside. It's a 10-minute mm-hmm. documentary. And so we had this podcast because one of the women who was in the film is now outside. She's free. And she was saying how this capacity to listen to people's stories, to hear the stories, and to value this truth that everyone has a story, everyone has a voice. She said, after filming, after the course and filming the documentary, I never again felt I was voiceless. And that was such a powerful statement. So the work that you do with the team is important for you. It's important for the families that you touch. And you don't know the ripple. Well, you do know, of course, that's why you do it. But the ripple effect, right, of someone hearing a story, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh, wait, me too.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's such a huge, so, yeah, I'm a big fan, so.
No, yeah, that's beautiful. I know it's definitely a goal of us is to have people not feel, not feel like that, not feel like they don't have something. It's a thing that we come across a lot, though. People say, oh, well, you don't want to hear my story. I don't have anything to say. And it's like, well, that's not true. Because you have perspectives and things that no one has ever heard before. You have events and stories and things. There's a popular thing online of like, oh, I've never had an original experience. Because regardless of how weird the tale is that someone's saying, someone else is like, yep, that also happened to me. No, there's no original experiences. It's like, but it is original. It is. It's still your perspective. That's a thing that no one else has. No one else will ever have again in the future. So I do hope that is what people feel when they, listen to this. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you so much. What a beautiful conversation. I've loved this. If anyone was listening to this and they, possibly wanted to reach out or wanted to learn more about you, is there any way that they could do that? Is there any yes. way that you would lead them to learn more about you and your... and the things that you do?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for asking. So I keep an Instagram account for sharing this type of work. Mm-hmm. So the Instagram account is good because people can see what I do and who I am, and they can DM me through the Instagram mm-hmm. account. So it's my name with underscores between the names. So Sangeeta_Lau_Biagi. And then I have a YouTube channel where I share some of the teachings. So that's also Sangeeta Prabhaji. And then there's an email. I'm not going to give the email now, perhaps, but I can give it to you. And then if people want to reach me, they can ask you. I don't know what's the best, or I can say it. I don't know.
Yeah.
What is that? Yeah. So it's my full name, Sangeeta Laura Biagi. that's a big spelling. And then at gmail.com. So yeah, everybody's welcome to reach out, ask questions about what they heard, or if you want to learn more about Nadi Yoga, or sure, it would be a great pleasure for sure. Yeah.
Beautiful, perfect. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for chatting. I appreciate you.
Yeah.
That.
That's it. That's us. That's our recording.
This podcast was possible due to listeners like you. The inspiration and funds of Hear Your Story and our amazing team, our producer, Madeline Mason, our social media video and transcription editor, AJ Ray, our video editor, Adrian Parker, our copywriter, Parker Robbins, our post-production supervisor and graphic designer, Abby Kelly, our creative art director, Chelsea Jewell, and myself, Robin Ekberg, as your host and audio editor. Thank you so much for joining us, and remember to share your story.